Today on Rockin' the Suburbs, join us on a busy patio as Randall makes a long, unawaited apology.
I had this big speech planned because I have to apologize to you for what you don't even know about, but I was a snotty punk back in the late 80s to 90s, and so kind of completely ignored the Judy Bats. Mm-hmm. And then over the years, I have met members of the Judy Bats, and my comeuppance for being a snotty punk has been what lovely people these are that I ignored in 1989 or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, I remember all you people.
This is Randall Brown, your guest host for today's episode of Rockin' the Suburbs. Jim and Patrick are off doing important Jim and Patrick things, so to fill in today, I'm going to catch up with one of my hometown's very own pop stars. You might remember from the late 80s and early 1990s, a band called the Judy Bats. Lead singer Jeff Heiskell still makes music and has a new album out this year called Songs in the Key of H. Jeff joined me at Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria in Knoxville's Old City, a place we both thought would be a nice, quiet place to chat and have lunch for the interview. Neither of us realized, though, that local radio station WDVX was having their noonday live broadcast. So in the background here, you'll enjoy the sounds of some of Knoxville's top players. And now, join us on the Barley's Patio with Jeff Heiskell.
So I did, since I did have to face my own ignorance on that, I did some refreshing.
Oh, and here's, I brought you one of those.
Oh, awesome. I have it from the iTunes, but thank you for
that. Way you got a physical copy.
And for iPod listeners, Jeff has just handed me his new album, Songs in the Key of H. You record just under the name Heiskell.
Yes.
Like a good old one name.
I mean, it makes sense.
Artist, yeah.
I mean, it's what I was called a lot when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And when I was in school, it was high school.
Yeah.
People, I don't know why that is, but a lot of people call me high school instead of that. So.
Interesting. I guess there's some names that just, it seems more fitting than the...
Yeah, it's interesting. It's some names that they really do. I've always wondered why that is with certain people that you tend to want to call them by their last name.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's some science behind it.
I've had people who say my whole name just comes out like Randall Brown.
And there's a lot of people. Yeah. There's a lot of people that do. I'm the same way about certain people's names.
Certain.
Yeah.
I can think of Mark Arnold, but I always think.
Exactly. Why not say
if I'm
Mark Arnold?
To him, yeah.
And
like,
why would you just say Mark?
Yeah.
You say Mark Arnold.
Or the infamous Mark. But now we're getting into deep Knoxville nickname.
Exactly.
Nickname etymology. Well, anyway, there with my historical apology out of the way, I did do some Judy Bats refreshers on found some great YouTube clips of you guys out there from way back in the day.
Wow.
On Conan appearance.
Yeah, I remember that.
And stuff like that. But I did want to start with what really had me thinking about you guys. Recently on the podcast, they talked about Rocky Erickson's passing just a few weeks back.
Right.
And they talked about the covers album, the tribute album to Rocky back in the day.
Right.
That had... the first band I always think of is the Butthole Surfers were on there, but it had a bunch of folks on there. And the Judy Bats got on there with She Lives in a Time All Her Own.
Yeah.
She lives, no fear, doubtless in everything she knows. Through time, unchecked, the sureness of her flows. She leaves herself inside you when she goes. We'll be right back.
I thought we could start with how did that come about? How did you get connected to being on that tribute album?
Well, that was right when we got signed. And we were scheduled to go record up in Woodstock. So we were scheduled to go up there and record, and how we ended up on there, I don't know, other than I'm trying to think. I can't remember if how the song even got selected.
Yeah.
I have no recollection of that.
Was it like an assignment from Sire Records?
Yes. At the time? Yeah. It's like do a song.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know. Richard Goddard may have picked it himself. We learned it one day and recorded it the next.
And was that the producer?
Or, mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Exactly how that came about, I can't exactly remember. Other than, I mean, you know, if somebody's going to put you on a compilation thing like that, you're not going to say no.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it could be like a Taylor Dane compilation, and you're going to say, yeah, I'll do a Taylor Dane song. Yeah. I mean, why not? You know, if you're a musician, why not do that?
If we can sit on the car hood or whatever.
Whatever she famously did.
Yeah. Well, awesome. And I think there was a... did y'all do a video for that too, here, somewhere here in Knoxville?
Yeah, we did. We did a video here in the old city. And how that came about or why that ended up being the first video, I couldn't even tell you that. Other than I guess there was going to be a real push on that disc. So it was decided that we were going to do a video for it, and there was a video budget. Once again, you don't go, no, I don't want to. You can keep your money out. I don't want to do a video for that. And it was interesting doing that. It was a big deal here in town, you know, because at that time, no one had done a music video, had they, ever?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so either. And now that's something, you know, I famously never enjoyed those music videos.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, it's horrible. I hated them.
Like the production... of them,
just I think that's what it is. And then see, the years have passed, and you know, for my new material, independently, I've done four.
Yeah.
I don't know when it is that I started liking them, actually doing them.
Just the process.
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah. I was really uncomfortable then with the lip syncing and all of that kind of stuff. I just was. I just felt silly doing it.
Because you guys were very much a live, local act. In venues.
Right. Yeah, so that was very strange, and but we did it. And people still talk about that video.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of fun.
Was there, if I remember this video right, I remember seeing it and noting the high production of it, and there was a point in the video where it seemed like there was a video flash or something, a segue, and it was like a stylist had shown up on set. And like the last half of the video, everyone's hair is a little different. Does that sound like something?
Yes.
Am I imagining this memory?
A queen really got a hold of the hair there at the end. Yeah. I'm kind of starting... I have not seen that video since then.
Oh, yeah.
I'm remembering the dancing around.
Yeah.
Blue screen, green screen, or whatever thing that was done. Yeah.
There was like a hired local dancer who was dancing sort of superimposed over the top of you guys.
Yes.
Maybe she was living in a mind all her own.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry that that's like what stood out in my memory, but it's like I remember watching it 120 minutes back in the day, and I was like, they all look different at the end of the video. What just happened?
And that's what it was. I can't remember where that was filmed. I think we did that upstairs at Planet Earth.
After starting with the Rocky Erickson cover, was like the first release that you guys had with Sire?
Yes.
Yeah.
Wasn't it? Yes, I think it was.
So your splash, say, nationally was the tribute album, and then the first Judy Betts album came out?
Well, actually, what came out first was four songs that had the song All I Want to Do Is Fuck Your Hair on it, and a Christmas song, I think, or was that later? There was something that came out, but I wrote this really depressing song called Here Comes Christmas. Ed and I wrote it and recorded it. And that was actually the first thing that was released.
Like a holiday EP?
Yeah, sort of. That's what I'm thinking. It was Here Comes. It had two or three songs on it. And I think it had a couple of cuts from the album that was coming up, but they were on there as well. I think Don't Drop the Baby was on there. I don't even know if I have a copy of that anymore.
What was the first album? Was it just called Judy Betts, or did it have... Was it
Native Son.
Native Son. Oh, okay, that's right.
Yeah.
Native
Son.
Listened to Native Son last night, and I realized there might have been a moment or two over the years that I heard that, and it didn't immediately ring to me as like, that's the Judy Betts.
Mm-hmm.
Just, it's, sometimes you go back and listen to a group, and maybe right off the cuff you're like, what songs did they do? And then you listen to a few, and it's like, yes, I know these songs. Like,
yeah, that'll happen to me
very
too.
Specifically.
Like, God, it'll happen to me, and I was like, I had no idea. I've heard that song 500 times. I didn't know they did that song.
Yeah. Well, over the years, Native Son is one of those that would randomly pop into your head, and maybe just the chorus. Like, mm-hmm. you don't remember that whole song.
Exactly.
You find yourself going, Native Son, like all day.
Yeah.
So you went into the first album with those other things out in the world, and how did things get going with Sire back in the day? Just were you on tour immediately, or how did that major label sign on take you from playing Hawkeyes and other venues here in town to the world.
Yeah, suddenly we were on this little old janky tour bus that, the door didn't work very well even. And we were just riding around playing shows all over the country. It went from one thing to another. But, we were playing outside of town anyway to try and get signed.
Yeah.
So, we did have some experience playing outside of town. Not a whole lot of it, but, I would say we played outside of town at least 15 times.
Mm-hmm.
So we were somewhat prepared.
Yeah. Before the signing and getting into all that.
Yeah, because we were kind of going around and playing already, and mainly we were going up to Baltimore and D.C. and playing and trying to get, and some New York City some to try and get signed to get, so A&R people could come and see us.
Yeah.
We were on a tour bus just driving around.
Yeah.
With shows booked, opening for various bands, headlining some at the time.
Mm-hmm. I remember back in the day looking on America Online, and I guess you all have been out for a few years, but there was a very enthusiastic chat room dedicated to the Judy Betts.
And I think I might remember that.
Yeah.
Vaguely.
But coming from the Knoxville perspective and still kind of thinking of you guys as the Knoxville band they go out of town, but they're a Knoxville band. But then to see people from far and wide very enthusiastically talking about Judy Batts news and trivia or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, it was interesting. And even with me, psychologically, after we got signed and were playing outside of town, mm-hmm. I got where I no longer felt like I was a Knoxville band at all. Mm-hmm. In fact, the idea of playing here just was horrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah. That happened. It was just day and night that happened. I think a lot of it was a scrutiny.
Yeah.
And there was so much resentment from people, mm-hmm. a lot of people, when we got signed.
Yeah.
Oh, it was deafening. I mean, it was huge.
Like bands that would have liked to have done that around town?
Yes, yes. And mainly it was bands that were pretending that they were whatever indie rock meant back then.
Yeah.
They were pretending that they were indie rock and that they would never, even if a major label wanted to sign them, they were so punk rock and indie rock, they would never sign to a major label. And you know, the truth is, they would do all kind of nasty, dirty things to get on any label, anywhere, for any reason. So it kind of, it just kind of unveiled them as complete phonies. And I could name some names, but I'm not going to do that.
That's weird to hear, because, you know, I was telling you, like, from the snotty punk aspect, that I was like, the punk guys, of course they got signed.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Let's go play the pizza place again.
Yeah, because we're real musicians.
Thinking my next brilliant question. So that played into, like, not even your feeling of not wanting to come back and play Knoxville, you just played all around, or?
Well, I just felt like back then, I'm not sure what everybody was trying to be. Mm-hmm. See, when I first started making music, it was Ed and I, who were roommates, and he had never even owned an electric guitar. Very accomplished guitarist, classically trained. We were writing little songs on a classical guitar and on acoustic. I started, all of my inspirations for music were from folk, not from rock. So when it transitioned and it suddenly started turning into other things, I didn't have any of that punk cred.
Yeah.
I never listened to any of that stuff. Uh-huh. And there was no way for me to pretend that I ever did. So I came from folk into pop, into pop rock.
Yeah.
You know, so... And there was no one else in town that was like that. You know, everyone else was punk rock, or thought they were punk rock. And so that kind of played... I never felt like I was a part of the music scene here at all, ever, to begin with. And... you know, we really weren't together and didn't play that long before we got signed. It was a couple of years. It was 2 years. So, I never really felt part of the music community here. And then, you know, I stopped making music for years and years and years. And when I came back to it here about 10 years ago, I thought everyone here in town kind of looked at me as the... Is it Rick Astley? like the Astley person of Knoxville? That's how I felt. And I was shocked when I started writing music on my own at how much respect people had for me.
Really?
And how talented they thought I was. I was completely shocked because I thought I was a pariah all these years.
And there's that truck stop.
So that was... He's going away. But that was pleasant. It completely blew me away.
Yeah. The music scene. It's like he knows we're recording. The music scene in Knoxville really shifted away from I guess the punk coolness of the late 80s, early 90s, whatever, mm-hmm. and the whole Americana thing. Really kicked in.
Deliver me from all that.
I hear you. Sorry, Americana friends.
Yeah.
Which kind of touched, I guess, on the historical vibe of Knoxville being, you know, the cradle of country music.
Right. It does, but...
And there's a giant... I'm always describing some visual whenever I chip in for the podcast.
Oh, yeah, there's this mural behind us with Dolly and the Everly Brothers and Hank Williams. Oh, yeah, just right there.
Grandpa Jones is up there and everybody.
Yeah.
Ted Atkins is probably on there somewhere.
Well, with me, I have a different... That's my own problem that I have with the Americana thing. First of all, I don't like genres.
Oh, yeah.
And second of all...
I'm stuck in those.
If there's anybody in this town that was going to be Americana, my formative years were spent... in a trailer park. Okay, my father owned trailer parks.
Yeah.
And then a lot of my life was spent in rural Central Florida. I started training horses when I was 11 years old.
Yeah.
So if there's anyone in this town that was going to call themselves Americana and talk about screen doors slamming and down on the farm and all that stuff,
yeah.
Which from what I've observed, all these people that are making that music, they don't know nothing about that. You know,
not trained a horse.
No, they would get nervous even going into the petting zoo at the Knoxville Zoo. So with me, I feel like if anybody was going to inherit that kind of thing, like I still have my belt buckle for my horse showing days.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And so if anybody was going to make Americana music in this town, it would be me. So that's why when all that moved in, you know, my eyes are still rolling about it. And actually, you know that on my new CD. I listened to Josh Smith's new release twice, and the second time that I listened to it, I wrote, I'm still around. I wrote that most of that in my head in my car on the way home.
Here's to the girl I never learned how to love. And to the man I just couldn't get enough of. And to the miserable task that is me still hanging around here. To 1,000 cliched tears in my beer. But I'm still around. Been on this bar still so long, my feet can't touch the ground. I'm still around, but I've been down, 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 down.
And that's Americana.
Yeah.
And I just thought to myself, I'm just gonna go down that road and write something like that.
Yeah.
But that's the only time I've ever really. There's a couple of times I've, you know.
I want to touch on an Americana.
Went into that territory.
Yeah.
But yeah, the whole Americana thing just it moved in, didn't it?
Yeah.
And boy, it ain't going nowhere.
And don't you go away, or at least come back tomorrow when we have part two of our interview with Jeff Heiskell.
I remember all you people.